Hello, welcome to another episode of Unpacking Neuroqueerness. In this episode, I'm going to talk about skill regression after, particularly what happens after someone is diagnosed with autism, ADHD, or any kind of similar similar neurodivergent neurotype, any kind of similar diagnosis, but particularly when it relates to autism and ADHD, people will sometimes experience something called skill regression, or what it's viewed as, in my opinion, it's viewed more from the outside perspective as skill regression, but internally it's more like realizing that things that you've struggled with your entire life are actually because you have a developmental neurological disability rather than you were broken or you were wrong or you were lazy or all the things that neurodivergent people tend to be called, particularly when they or other people around them don't know that they are neurodivergent. This is an episode. The inspiration for this episode came from my friend Ashra's podcast, Autistic After Hours. She did an episode on skill regression. Feel free to check out her podcast as well. I actually checked in with her about, you know, me doing an episode on my podcast about skill regression as well, just because I didn't want her to feel like I was copying her episode, because of course I always do my episodes in my own way, but I just wanted to bring that topic to my listeners as well, because I feel like it's a very important topic, not only for neurodivergent people to understand and learn and accept more about themselves, but also for neurotypicals to better understand neurodivergent people, particularly if you have friends or family that are neurodivergent or you work with neurodivergent children or adults or such. It's important to remember that when a person is diagnosed, particularly later in life, if they're diagnosed after childhood or even as an adult or even as an older adult, which can happen a lot of times because, as I've mentioned many times before on this podcast, the diagnostic criteria is centered around presentations of autism and ADHD that are generally prevalent in young white boys. And so everyone that falls outside of that category can have a harder time getting a diagnosis. It's not to say that they won't be able to get a diagnosis, because yes, people that aren't young white boys do get diagnosed, but they usually have a harder time getting diagnosed because the way women are conditioned in society, the way non-white people are conditioned in society to present, does not match the typical presentations of, even while masking, it does not tend to, it's different than how autistic males or autistic white presenting people present. So autistic women and non-white people get often overlooked and not diagnosed, and then struggle with ADHD, executive dysfunction, or autism, sensory meltdown, whatnot, related things, you know, such as, you know, these things like executive dysfunction, these things like sensory overload, like meltdowns. And then they often get blamed as if it were their personal fault, where it's just really the way their brain works. And so what tends to happen after diagnosis, when this person that was just diagnosed at, say, age 24 or 34 or 44 or 54 or 58 or whenever it was, whenever in life, you know, when they get that diagnosis, they eventually, there's like a grief process that goes with that, because you realize that all the times you've been called lazy, you've been called oversensitive, you've been called too literal, you've been called non-cooperative, like all of these things are related to the way your brain works and how your brain works differently than most people, especially in the case of autism and ADHD, with autism with sensory sensitivities, with social communication differences, with things such as sensory overload, meltdowns, shutdowns, with ADHD, with executive dysfunction. Like, these are things that people often, especially when they don't know they are neurodivergent, and when people around them don't know they are neurodivergent, that they have ADHD, that they're autistic, that whatever, they get blamed. A lot of people going through school get blamed for, like, executive dysfunction gets called them being lazy, sensory sensitivity gets called them being oversensitive, you know, social communication differences gets them bullied for being so-called weird or different or non-understanding or whatever, like, different styles of empathy, hyper-empathy, which can lead to shutdowns, gets interpreted as us not having empathy, so all kinds of stuff. And so there's this whole grief process that happens as a late diagnosed neurodivergent person, where you look back and you realize how you've been wronged and how you've been misinterpreted and misjudged and ostracized for just having a brain that works differently and for just having struggles with certain things and having certain support needs that in a capitalist, Puritan-based society that we live now are not generally accommodated for, given the nature of the system and the structures in the society that we live in. This society does not really honor the needs of disabled people, because it's a society that runs off of productivity and rates people's worth based on productivity. And so disabled people that aren't able to produce at the same rates or even in the same style get often seen as lesser, which is just one of the main symptoms of systemic ableism. And you start to realize all this. You start to realize that you've been wronged by society, that there's nothing wrong with you, that you are different, that you have different support needs, that you need things in order to thrive that society has not historically provided enough of. And so that can result in you where in situations where you used to overexhaust yourself and burn yourself out from spending enormous amounts of effort that you shouldn't have to spend in order to just be able to do certain things, to present in a certain way, you realize that you didn't really need, like, that you were kind of doing yourself a disservice by, like, masking around people, and, like, particularly when it comes to, like, social situations, when it comes to making yourself present yourself in a certain way to certain people and, like, doing certain favors to certain people that actually take a lot of effort for you, but you want it to be accepted and understood, because when you wouldn't do these things for people, you would get called lazy by them. So now you have this diagnosis, you understand more about yourself, you might start saying to the person that you used to always do favors for that are actually really taxing for you, and you need to kind of step away, and you need to be like, oh, actually, this is something that, because of the way my brain works, I can't really, it doesn't, you know, it's going to take up too much energy, and I need to prioritize where I spend my energy. You might start doing that. You might start being more considerate of, what do I feel like I can handle right now, and what do I need to save my energy for later? And the person might be confused because they might say, oh, well, you used to be able to do that before. Why can't you do it now? And they might interpret it as you having a skill regression, or you becoming more autistic or more ADHD after being diagnosed. But it's not that. It's like you have the same kind of brain and the same kind of support needs. The difference is now you're actually honoring your support needs, and you're actually honoring, like, how much energy do I actually have to do this? Is it worth it? Is it going to drain me? Do I need to save energy? Am I able to actually do this without burning myself out? And determining that, actually, no, I can't do this without burning myself out. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having more support needs, with having a brain that works differently. And then laying a boundary and saying, no, actually, I can't really do this right now. And it's up to the other people to understand. It's up to the non-disabled person to understand that you have a disability that you didn't know about, but you always had it. And now you know about it, and now you're better about gauging what's going to take too much energy and what am I able to do. And some things are just going to take too much energy, and I need to preserve myself as a disabled person. I need to prioritize what I can do right now and what I can't. And there's nothing wrong with not being able to constantly produce, constantly and constantly being able to accommodate other people's needs. Obviously, we all have to survive in this capitalist society, and that means a lot of disabled people do have to burn themselves out just to be able to survive. But at least we can start with personal boundaries. At least when it comes to relationships, we can set what we actually can do and what we can't, and what people are going to accept that, and people that aren't, maybe time to let them go. Anyways, that's all I have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode. I hope it was helpful, and I'll see you next time.